Do you love to love? Have you stopped dating because nobody lives up to your expectations? So it's just not worth your time? Do you want love, but you sit home in your slacks thinking, if it's meant to be, they'll somehow locate you on your sofa? Yeah, this podcast is for you. I'm Carmen Bertlin, I'm a neurosemantics coach, yoga, and meditation teacher, and I'm also human, with all the challenges that come with that. This is my big leap from serial monogamist to feeling fulfilled as a single person. Consider this a guide to stepping into the shoes that you were meant to fill, so that when you meet someone, they're not a life raft, they're an added bonus. Welcome to the Single Best. I'm excited to be in your ear. You know, I felt a sense of shame today. It was really quite interesting to observe the feeling of shame. So I jumped into my car to go for a drive, thinking I have to get some more screen washes. I've run out. And it'd been raining overnight, so I turned on my wipers and noticed to my horror that a bird had shat on my rear window. And when I turned on my wipers, I smeared that shit in the shape of a rainbow across the back of my car. And this wasn't just any bird. It was some giant dog-like thing that had a bucket of KFC for breakfast, surely, because it actually didn't look like your standard bird poop. Why was it brown? Was it a fox that had done it? I don't know, but the shame I felt driving like that through town was as if I'd shat my own pants walking down the high street. I was laughing out loud and I felt my cheeks turn red hot. Don't look at me. Stay away from me. I had to turn off the beaten track to go the back way straight into the car wash. As I pulled up to the attendant and rolled down my window, I was laughing so hard, asking him to look at the back of my car. He thought it was quite funny too, but he didn't laugh as much as I did. It was the shame that made me have this inflated reaction, way over the top. So shame. It's an overbearing emotion. The fear of it alone can prevent us from doing things. Things like public speaking or walking up to someone to strike up a conversation. If we felt shame intensely even once, our brain will do anything to keep us from feeling it again. It can be so uncomfortable that we announce that we'd rather die than go through it again. Well, that brown shit stain on my window was not that bad. But I've had some experiences throughout life that have been shameful to the point of absolute cringe. Getting caught shoplifting at the age of 13, having the whole school know about it within 24 hours was one of those experiences. Me and my friend had to climb into the back of a paddy wagon in front of the busy supermarket in town. It was printed in the paper the next day. It was like they were out to shame us, prevent us from reoffending. Or when my mom came to get me from a house party after midnight, dressed in a gown and gumboots, fuming like a steam train. It might not matter so much to some, but to me it did. I didn't want to be known for being that kid who filled up their backpack with hair dye and perm solution at the supermarket, or the kid with the strictest parents. What we care about matters at the end of the day. And then hopefully with age, we can laugh at shameful things a little bit more. It matters a little bit less, and hopefully we have ceased to take ourselves so damn seriously. My friend recently went on a few consecutive dates with a guy who made her a nice meal, and then it came up in conversation that he had been in prison. Now, everyone has a past, but it was the way that she said it that had me crack up. It all sounded so promising, and then he drops this bombshell that made her go, "Safe to say, I won't be seeing him again." This was my reaction.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. This is too funny. Wow. Did he say why? Was it something minor? Like, could it have been overlooked? Has he redeemed himself since? Did his cooking not make up for his dodgy past? Wow. relinquishing in in dating, modern dating stories. Honestly, like, I cannot get enough of them because they're just so fabulous. It's so fabulous. Oh, we have to have a book. A book of dates. Book of dates. Yes.
I quizzed her a bit about the reasons for his incarceration. I actually had to look up this word, by the way. It took me a few goes to find it because I was typing incarceration, as in in-castle, which makes total sense to me. Someone in a castle, right? Incarcerated. No, it's got nothing to do with castles, apparently. Anyway, she said it was something minor, but it was the fact that he wouldn't take ownership of it that bugged her. It was years ago and he was still blaming someone else for it. It wasn't like he'd been framed either. It was a fight, like, highly doubtful that he'd been sentenced for being a punching bag. Now, dating someone new can really make us miss an ex, that familiar comfort and safety, the good qualities they had that initially drew us to them, and even the bad qualities they had. Better the devil you know, right? We may feel disheartened and think that we'll never find what we had with someone previous ever again. If it was the right decision to end it, why do we feel so bad? Why are we lonely? Why isn't anyone better coming along? And the more we churn it, the good memories float to the top and the bad ones sink to the bottom. This is human nature. This is why we forgive others and why women go through childbirth again after traumatizing experiences. It's perfectly normal to miss someone we had warm feelings for. It doesn't mean that it's right to be with them just because we long for them. A breakup tends to happen for a reason. I'm not sure I'm going with this, but maybe to say that if you're out there dating, just hang in there. It can feel really tough sometimes, but your date fails can really spread joy and make it feel as though we're all in the same boat, you know? I salute you. Truly I do, as I've thrown in the towel for the foreseeable future. If love won't confine me with a 90s boombox underneath my bedroom window declaring its undying desire for me, I don't fucking want it. There is a German word that translates to storm free. It's called sturmfrei. It's the freedom of being alone, the ability to do what you want. It's so tempting when we get to a place of inner peace to give up on the idea of entering another relationship because it will potentially disrupt that peace that we've finally created. When having conversations with my sisters who are 15 and 20 years older than me, they both say that they're done with relationships and want to be alone for the rest of their lives. We have the same parents, obviously some differences in upbringing as we're many years apart, but seemingly we have picked up some similar patterns that transfer over into romantic relations. More often than not, we tend to put aside our own needs to fully be there for the other person. To our own detriment, obviously, as has been proven. As highly as I value self-love and inner peace, and I completely understand why they both say that they choose themselves over another romantic relationship, for me, this is too soon. Self-love doesn't replace romantic love. I feel fulfilled, yes, and I'm not wanting for anything right now, but I absolutely welcome it and I'm open to another partnership. Esther Perel says that true growth happens with others when our behaviors get mirrored in another person. We don't have to have this idea that we must be somehow complete before we meet someone. Two people working on themselves can meet and then work on themselves together. That idea to me is very attractive. We're never complete, and therefore it's a fallacy to believe that when we meet someone, things will be perfect. We'll complete each other. No. We meet someone and the work continues, and sometimes we grow apart, but hopefully we grow together. There's another saying that goes, if you think you're enlightened, go and spend time with family. And damn, this is right. This is a classic example of bearing witness to our own ill behaviors when in company with people who push our buttons. If someone annoys you for reasons you can't quite put your finger on, it's possible that they exhibit behavior you're actively trying to change or suppress in yourself. Perhaps it's not the person's patterns that make you so irritated, but rather your own relationship to those patterns. Keynote speaker Corey Mascara suggests that with this knowledge to ask yourself, in what ways did I learn I would lose love if I acted the way that this person does? For example, if I can't tolerate someone getting angry, which is a thing of mine actually, this is likely to be a behavior that I suppress in myself. And yes, I avoid anger. My mom used to have explosive anger, and I absolutely didn't want to become like her, partly because of that. Sometimes I would get angry at the boys who would tease me at school, and it was like fuel to their fire. I quickly learned that suppressing my anger wouldn't be as fun for them as me getting angry, so they quickly tired and I was left alone. I began suppressing anger because it worked in my favor. One of my ex-boyfriends had explosive anger similar to my mom's. He wouldn't get angry at me, but he would get angry at the world and things going wrong, especially when he was under stress. And my whole body would go into freeze mode when he did. I physically started shutting down. I didn't want to be anywhere near him when he was angry. So yes, it's very interesting to notice where these reactions come from and why we experience them. You've heard that saying, right? That when you point a finger at someone, four fingers point back at you. So it always starts within. And if we remain curious, we can certainly learn a lot. I'm reading Marianne Williamson's book, Return to Love, at the moment. And although she mentions God a lot in this particular book, and I have a level of difficulty with that, I've picked out a few golden nuggets that from this text, and I'm going to share something about relationships that can teach us about ourselves here. So here it goes. Someone with whom we have a lifetime's worth of lessons to learn is someone whose presence in our lives forces us to grow. Sometimes it represents someone with whom we participate lovingly all of our lives, and sometimes it represents someone who we experience as a thorn in our side for years or even forever. Just because someone has a lot to teach us doesn't mean that we like them. People who have the most to teach us are often the ones who reflect back to us the limits to our own capacity to love. Those who consciously or unconsciously challenge our fearful positions. They show us our walls, and our walls are our wounds, the places where we feel that we can't love anymore, we can't connect anymore deeply, we can't forgive past a certain point. We're all in each other's lives in order to help us see where we most need healing and in order to help us heal. That's pretty cool. And yeah, sometimes we learn that we're supposed to all learn what we're supposed to from someone, and then our time with them is up and we move on our relationship, or our relationship with them changes. If we can be at peace with the thought that nothing's permanent and things are ever changing, then we can loosen the grip a little and hopefully relinquish some of our own anxiety with that as well. Because obviously, I personally think that anxiety comes often from the need to control a situation, to sort of morph it into what we want it to become rather than just let it be as it is. When, her name is Mel Robbins. Yes, she comes out with some real good ones. She said that, she has a theory that she calls the let them theory. And when I first heard that, it's just a very simple, basic, just like, if people say what they say or behave a certain way, just let them. And it was like, my shoulders just dropped when I heard that the first time. I was like, wow, nice. That would be so nice to do and practice a bit more. So yeah, I'm a bit conscious of that now when I get that sort of need to mold a situation the way I want it to be. Here's another good one that really hit home for me from the same book. So A Return to Love. She says, when we're not in relationship, the ego makes it seem as though all the pain would go away if we were. If the relationship lasts, however, it will bring much of our existential pain to the surface. That is part of its purpose. It will demand all of our skills at compassion, acceptance, release, forgiveness, and selflessness. We might tend to forget the challenges involved in a relationship when we're not in one, but we remember them clearly enough once we are. Relationships don't necessarily take the pain away. The only thing that takes the pain away is a healing of the things that cause the pain. It isn't the absence of other people in our lives that cause the pain, but rather what we do with them when they're there. Pure love asks for nothing but peace for a brother, knowing that only in that way we can be at peace ourselves. And then she adds a note that makes me laugh because it's so relatable. How many times have I had to ask myself, do I want him to be at peace or do I want him to call? I actually love this book. It provokes me at times, but that's also another sign or showing me what I need to work on. Clever like that. I'll add the book title to the show notes if you're interested in reading it. Definitely makes for a good read or a good sort of, again, manual to have around the house whenever you want to pick it up and put it down. It's kind of one of those books that you can just dip in and out of. As a side note to what she says there about relationships bringing up our pain to the surface, yeah, of course they will, but I do think that some relationships do this much more so than others because we're different in relation to different people. Some partners make us feel quite calm, whereas others might make us feel more provoked. Some dynamics are just easier than others. My last one was a big lesson for me, so I want my next one to be harmonious and relaxing. I'd like a little break from big, juicy revelations for a few years to come, please. It's time to just rest for a bit now, be at ease. Some may describe it as boring, but I fancy a bit of boring now, to be honest. Or not boring, but stable. Fun and stable. And sexy, obviously. And adventurous at times, like spontaneous mini breaks and stuff. But still stable and calm and hot. Not too much to ask, is it? Thanks again for listening in. I keep getting such beautiful feedback and it really is both humbling and motivating. Knowing that there's even one person who can relate to this makes the challenging experience seem worthwhile. These episodes don't always follow a clear structure, and I pick up pieces of information here and there that resonate with me, including as well any personal experiences from going through, well, heartbreak and challenging times for sure, but also really good times and beautiful relations. And some of my coaching background as well. Yes, well, sometimes the content is about relationships. Sometimes it's about dating. Other times about being single, about self-discovery. But it's all intertwined and hopefully as lighthearted as it is intended. So, happy St. Paddy's Day to your Irish lot. I just heard my housemate crack open a can of Guinness downstairs. His dad is Irish, and I think I might just join him for one. Until next time, lots of self-love.